afternoon, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. I am your host, Mark Levine. Oregon is my new hero state. Oregon believes, catch this, that voting is something that every Oregonian should be allowed to do. They actually believe that every Oregonian who drives a car should also be able to register to vote, and that you shouldn't have to jump through several hoops and processes to do it. It should just come to you automatically. That the government, which already finds out where you live and what you do and verifies your identity, should let you vote. And if that sounds unextraordinary, then you don't really follow America's voting systems, because it is extraordinary. What Oregon is doing is making Oregon the most voter participatory state in the United States. Three cheers for Oregon. We're going to talk about that in just a second. After that, women's pay parity. Hey, women out there getting 78 cents on the dollar, relax. Rest assured, according to a recent study, you will get pay parity in 2058. So that's good. Just wait 43 years and guess what? You'll get paid equally. Well, at least on average, you will. And honestly, it depends where you live. If you live in Louisiana or some other states like that, Wyoming actually is the worst. If you live in Louisiana, you won't get pay parity till 2106. So if you're 10 now, you will get pay parity when you're 101 and still working in Louisiana. If you're in Wyoming, you'll have to wait a little bit longer. If you're, say, 10 now and hard at work on your lemonade stand, you will get pay parity in Wyoming when you're 149 years old. Did I get that right? Gotta do my math. 154. Something like that. You may not live that long. Anyway, there are states where it will come sooner. Maryland and so forth. We'll get to those. I'm going to talk about that. And then, while we're busy with all the good news, not to worry, Antarctica's greatest glacier may soon be melting. And in fact, it's connected just at the very tip of the edge. And that melting, which could well happen this year, maybe next, is likely to raise American water, seawater, the ocean, all around the United States of America, 10 feet. 10 feet in a single year. I know all you Republicans don't want to talk about climate change. 10 feet! That's significant. That's not an inch or anything like that. So, lots to talk about, and maybe even time to focus on Congressman Aaron Schock and why he resigned after getting an interior decorator to redesign his office to look like Downton Abbey. You know, I think actually he thought he was on a reality show rather than being a member of Congress. I get it. He's young. He's good looking. He really wants that Hollywood gig. And maybe he'll get it now that he's resigning from Congress after charging taxpayers to redecorate his office. If you want to call in, it's 888-653-7543. I want to start by talking about Oregon. See, there's a fundamental difference between how some Americans, we'll call them Democrats, and other Americans, we'll call them Republicans, look at voting. Democrats see voting as a right, as something that our forefathers died for, and foremothers, something that is the reason why we separated from Great Britain. Remember, no taxation without representation? They see voting as something that in the Civil War, after fighting for their freedom, African Americans fought for the right to vote and got the right to vote, well, at least ostensibly got that in the Constitution in 1870, but they didn't actually get those rights till the Civil Rights Movement. We celebrated, of course, the march across the Pettus Bridge in Selma just 50 years ago. And people did fight and die for that right to vote, and women fought and died for the right to vote 100 years ago or so, 95. This is something that we Democrats and many Republicans see as a vital part of American democracy, that you cannot have a representative democracy unless you have that democracy portion where the people can choose their leaders. I consider voting sacrosanct, and so does Oregon. Oregon has probably the highest voter participation of any state in the United States, and a new law will help them increase that even further. What they're doing is very simple. They're taking the voter, the driver's license IDs that you get when you apply for a driver's license, and yes, they take your picture, and yes, they check your ID, and yes, it's all very secure because they don't want the wrong person on the wrong ID, and they're going to be sending out voting literature. You are automatically registered to vote. Now, for all of you who are really worried about being registered to vote, and I don't think there's too many of you out there, don't worry, you can opt out. You can write back to Oregon and say, I don't want to vote. I don't want to participate in my democracy. I don't want to have a choice about who my leaders are. I think very few people will do that. But you have that option. You certainly do. I mean, here's the thing. If you're registered to vote, dirty little secret is you don't really have to vote. We don't have compulsory voting like they do in Australia where they fine you if you don't vote. Although, it's an interesting idea. No, we don't have that. So even if you're registered to vote, you still don't have to vote. But at least you're registered. And when you change your address and notify the DMV, your voting address changes too, automatically. It's actually now the worry of the state to make sure you're registered rather than your individual problem. And you can go ahead and take care of your kids and make sure they'll get off to school and get to your job on time and do all those things that you do with your life and not have to worry that, wait a minute, I moved and, oh, I've got to re-register and, hey, I have to do it before this date and, oh, what's my precinct? And if I go to the wrong precinct, do I lose my right to vote? And what if I'm out of town? Oregon has decided that voting is so important that they're going to make their citizens have it as easy as possible to vote. And I think this should be a model across the country. Now, I recognize that there are people who should be able to vote, namely all citizens of the states, that don't have a driver's license. That is certainly true. Oregon is not excluding them. This is a start. It is their goal eventually to get every Oregonian. So even this doesn't go far enough. Because I think everyone that the state knows about who is a citizen, who lives in the state, who is over the age of 18, should automatically get enrolled. After all, the state knows you exist. You got a Social Security number. They already know you're out there. And they should give you the right to opt out, as Oregon has. You don't want to vote? There's really only one reason I can think of to opt out of voter registration, because, again, you don't have to vote. And that is that voter registration also puts you in line to be on a jury. You probably know that. If you're registered to vote, every few years or so, you get a notice to appear on a jury. And again, why is that a bad thing? I don't think it's a bad thing at all. Wouldn't you want, if you were accused of a crime, to be judged by a jury of your peers and basically ordinary people around you, not just the sophisticated, who knows what, people who like to get on trials? They're probably the same people who watch some of those reality shows. Wouldn't it be great to have just ordinary people listen to the arguments and determine your fate? I think it is. I like our jury system. I think it's pretty damn good. I don't know why anyone would opt out of it. Yeah, if they call you for jury duty and you're busy, usually you can get an extension or get it moved to some other time. But that's really the only time, the reason I could think of why someone wouldn't want to register to vote. If they really don't want to participate in American democracy. They don't want to have a choice in who their leaders are. They don't want to sit on juries. But why wouldn't you? Oregon understands that ordinary people, good American citizens, people who care about their country, do want to vote, do want to be registered to vote, don't want to have to be worried about all the details of jumping through the hoops. And let's face it, states are throwing up hoops and hoops and hoops to make it harder to vote. You know, you live in one home, you move to another home, and, oh, you forgot to re-register to vote, and suddenly Election Day comes and you've lost your right to vote. In most states, you have to have registered a month or so prior to the election. Why should you? If you are a citizen of that state and you live in the district and you didn't fill out a form or the form you did fill out wasn't granted yet and you were busy raising your family, why should you lose your right to vote? The Republicans, of course, argue that it's all because of voting fraud. But voting fraud is different from mistakes on the voting rolls. We have mistakes on our voting rolls. It's true. But that's not voting fraud. And that doesn't cause a single vote to be miscast. Now, if you go into a voting place and you lie about who you are, well, I'm all for taking your picture. Give you a voter ID then and there. Let's have same-day registration. And if they take your picture and you sign and you claim you're someone, you say you're John Smith and you're not John Smith, throw you in jail. No problem. You want in-person voting fraud to be punished, 5-year felony. I don't think many people will risk 5 years in jail to cast one more vote for their candidate of their choice. And, of course, it's almost never happened. You'd be hard-pressed to find 10 cases of in-voter voting fraud in the last century anywhere in the United States. But Oregon understands that when people have busy lives, they should be able to vote. And I got to tell you something. There are people who feel otherwise, many in the Republican Party, but not exclusively. They feel that voting is a privilege, not a right. It's something that, well, you should have to jump through several hoops to do. You should have to register. You should have to re-register. You should have to bring in the proper ID. If you don't bring in the proper ID, or maybe you go to the wrong precinct, or maybe you go to the church where you voted 2 years ago, but it's changed to this school where you're supposed to vote today and you vote in the wrong place. They think that if you don't get every little detail right, you should lose the right to vote. Indeed, that argument was made in Florida in 2000, that people who didn't jump through every hoop and didn't realize that the butterfly ballot was misaligned and, you know, were, oh, I don't know, elderly and had trouble seeing the ballot, which was misaligned. If you don't get everything exactly right, you lose your right to vote. But see, I don't think voting's like that. I mean, if you are entering a contest and you don't follow all the rules exactly right, okay, you don't win the contest. But voting is not some contest. It's the fundamental bedrock of our democracy. The only legitimacy our government has is based on the fact that people vote for our leaders. And the moment everyone's not represented, and worse, people who want to vote are not allowed to vote, the moment we no longer become a representative democracy. Now, to be fair, that's not all the government's fault. I have long been upset at my fellow citizens who don't take the time to vote themselves. And I've done my best to vote in every election since the very first one that I could vote in. But it's a two-way street, and government shouldn't throw up unnecessary roadblocks. And three cheers to Oregon for understanding that. May the other 49 states follow suit. This is Mark Levine. If you want to call in, it's 888-653-7543. When we come back, we're going to talk about women's pay parity and how many hundred years you will have to wait if you're a woman till you get fairness in our country. We'll be right back after this. Welcome back to the show. This is Mark Levine. A new study, new report from the Institute for Women's Policy Research released this week, predicts that U.S. women will reach pay parity with men. They currently receive about 78 cents on the dollar. And that's up. That's up. Women only received 60 cents on the dollar 35 years ago in 1980. And they're doing better. In 35 years from now, they will be much closer, but not quite yet up to pay parity. According to this report, U.S. women will reach pay parity with men on average in the United States in 2058. So it's only 43 years from now, ladies. If you're 25, you should get pay parity around the time you're 68, though you may have retired by then. And if you're older, well, not really in your working lifetime. But look on the bright side. You could live in Wyoming. Wyoming is apparently the state the report says is the least likely to achieve pay parity anytime soon. In Wyoming, as I said before the break, and let me get my math right, if you're 10 years old now, so you're born in 2005, you will get pay parity when you're 154 years old. 2159. Yikes. Louisiana is second. Women there, it's projected, will get pay parity in 2106. Only a mere, doing the math again, 91 years from now. North Dakota's third, 2104. The thing is it kind of depends not only where you live, but what you do. If women are more highly educated, they're more likely to get pay parity. And obviously, if you live in a blue state, if you live in New York, for example, that has the narrowest wage gap in the country. New York State women actually earn 87.6 cents for every dollar banked by men. Right here in Washington, D.C., they earn 87 cents. Maryland, 87.4 cents. In those states, they're doing pretty well. Women are last in Louisiana, West Virginia, and Wyoming, where they get between 66 and 68 cents on the dollar. It also depends on your race. Asian women actually get 88.5 cents for every dollar earned by men. Latino women get the least, only about 53 cents, just a little more than half. What's interesting is that women actually are more likely to enroll in college than men, and yet across all levels of education, whether you have a college degree, graduate degree, women with graduate degrees earn about 70 cents or so on the dollar. But the good news is if the younger you are, the more likely eventually you'll be well treated. Millennial women out there, you're getting 85 cents on the dollar, which I guess is comparatively pretty good. So here's the point. We're making changes in this country. Change is a good thing. Pay parity is certainly a good thing. But it's awfully slow. And my guess, it just has to do with old hidebound notions of what men and women can do. Let's all work harder to create a country where this pay parity happens a lot sooner than 43 years from now. This is Mark Levine. If you want to call in, 888-653-7543. When we come back, you can talk about these two issues, Oregon or pay parity, or the fact that Antarctica ice is melting and drowning us all. We'll be right back after this. Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. Why should we in the United States care about a glacier on the other side of the world? On the bottom of the planet, as you might call it. Of course, there's really no top or bottom. We just sort of arbitrarily say that south is the bottom. And of course, at the southern reaches of the planet Earth, you find the continent of Antarctica, which has the largest ice sheets anywhere in the world. Well, this may be remembered, 2015, as the year when people finally started to recognize the dangers of global warming. Because one gigantic glacier in East Antarctica, called the Totten Glacier, is looking to be the fastest thinning sector of the world's largest ice sheet. According to a new paper just out in Nature Geoscience by an international team of scientists in the United States, Britain, France, and Australia, what's happening is this glacier is kind of holding back a whole bigger glacier, a glacier that's 90 miles by 20 miles across. That's a pretty large glacier. So the way it works is it's almost like, you got a wine bottle that's tilted on its side. And as long as the wine bottle's corked, not a lot of liquid's going to come out, but all you have to do is remove that cork, and suddenly a lot more water than the cork comes out. It all comes rushing out. And because Antarctica is so massive, and its ice sheet is so massive, that it actually has a gravitational pull, as Antarctica becomes less massive, it's not just the water that goes into the sea, but Antarctica is less likely to use its pull to bring more ice and water next to it. The sum and substance of all of this is that all around the globe, sea levels will rise, and they'll rise mostly away from Antarctica. The study, according to the lead study author, Jamin Greenbaum, a PhD candidate at the University of Texas at Austin, the study says that sea levels could rise more than 11 feet, and that's a conservative lower limit. I know that in Norfolk, Virginia, I live in the state of Virginia, Norfolk, they've already been raising all their piers. But 10 feet, that's a lot. And it could happen in just a year. And for all the dithering over climate change, this could be the thing that finally gets people to recognize exactly what's going on. Now, this is science. It's peer-reviewed. Obviously, other scientists may come to different conclusions, so I haven't seen them yet. And it has to do with very complex calculations regarding, you know, how warm water accesses the glacier base and how it gets in and how it melts. So I'm not promising you this will happen. But according to the study, which no one's really debunked yet, in the United States, the amount of sea level rise could be 25% or more the global average, precisely because we are so far from Antarctica. So the next time someone says to you, climate change, the Arctic Ocean melting, all of this, it might affect my grandkids, but how's it going to affect me? Well, let's just hope you don't have any beachfront home in Florida. Or, frankly, think of all the American cities that are on the water. New York comes to mind, but it could just as well be Los Angeles or Miami or any other major American city on the ocean. It's real, folks, and our time is running out, and it's amazing to me that people are just – I actually think people are waiting. I don't know what you think. You can call in at 886-537-543. I think people are waiting until massive amounts of beachfront property are destroyed. They're literally waiting until it's too late. It's all about, the idea that if I don't see it, it's not happening. Of course, the same could be said for disease. I feel okay, so I'm not going to go to the doctor. I'm not going to take this pill. Because I can't see the bacteria. I just wonder how long it will take. If this study is true, and maybe it's only half true, maybe it's only 5 feet, will politicians ever change their views? I'm not so sure. Let me know what you think. 886-537-543. And one less grim topic I want to bring up, since I've been bringing up women's pay parity and climate change and all these other grim topics. One, I think, amusing topic has to do with Aaron Schock. Do you know who he is? He's a Republican congressman from Illinois who just resigned yesterday because apparently he spent tens of thousands of mileage reimbursements he got for using his personal car. He logged 170,000 miles on his personal car and charged it all to the government. And then when he sold that car, it had only 80,000 miles on the odometer. So, I can understand someone getting a few miles off, but it's really hard to claim that your car has gone more than twice as far as it's gone and to charge that all to the taxpayers. Aaron Schock, you may remember, is the congressman who was famous mostly in addition to for showing off his very nice abs. He really has got nice abdominal muscles. But he's most famous for redecorating his entire congressional office in the style of Downton Abbey, which apparently he's a big fan of. And you know what? That's fine. I got no problem with that as long as he pays for it. But he's someone who, of course, charged his expense account, his congressional expense account for that, for luxury hotels, for fancy restaurants, for flying on private jets. The funny thing is that this guy definitely has a flair for style, a flair for attention. He certainly, has a picture of him. I think it's snowboarding up there. Here's the deal, Aaron, if I can give you a little advice. If you pay for it yourself, America actually tends to enjoy that kind of stuff. They enjoy the glamour of people living it up big and decorating their homes in all kinds of ways. Like I said, you might be a great candidate for a reality show. But when taxpayers have to pay for it, when they have to finance the bill for your Downton Abbey set, they're a lot less forgiving. And so, of course, Aaron Schock had to resign. If you want to comment on any of these stories, it's 888-653-7543. I'll go back to the good news. The good news, of course, in Oregon. The good news that one state is finally recognizing that the right to vote is a right and isn't a privilege. But I'll tell you, as I look at at Aaron Schock, I wonder what he was thinking. You know, we've come to this place in Congress, or really, frankly, in state legislatures throughout our election system, where the push to raise money is so huge that I think some people, some politicians, think they're accountable to whomever gives them the money and not accountable to the taxpayers themselves. That's part of the problem with restricting the right to vote. That's part of the problem with having extreme groups like the Koch brothers spend almost $1 billion on trying to change our democracy. It's all part of the legalized bribery that, well, they say money is the mother's milk of politics. It's the thing that makes our politics go. And when people are spending taxpayer dollars, particularly to reward the people that are giving them the money, I actually think that's worse than baking your office into a Downton Abbey set. I'll give you an example. Governor Chris Christie of New Jersey. If there's anyone who ought to be really careful about what he does, it's this guy, because he's running for president. And people running for president of the United States are subjected to very, very demanding, difficult standards of integrity, and they should be. And they should be. We have the right to hold our candidates for president to a higher standard. But Governor Chris Christie did what, I'd say, I don't want to say every, let's just say a whole bunch of governors, senators, congressmen, state legislators do. He rewarded his friends. In this case, his friend was Exxon. Exxon, which had contributed a whole bunch of money to Republican Governors Association, which Chris Christie headed, and basically had helped Chris Christie in his job. But you see, when a corporation gives cash, there has to be a quid pro quo. There has to be. Because when you think about it, if look at it from the corporation's point of view, if you are spending $1 million or $10 million or $50 million to buy a politician to curry favor with a particular party, and you don't get that favor, well, you've breached your fiduciary duty to shareholders. You've wasted your money. How could a corporation pay a politician and not get anything back? It's one thing for an individual to do it. If you're an individual, you might give money to a politician because they support your view on abortion, on gun regulation, on education, on transportation. You like their views. You want to see those views pushed forward. You give them money. But corporations are not individuals with consciences and political views. Corporations are legal fictions that are created in order to make money. The only goal of that's not true of a nonprofit. A nonprofit corporation could want to feed the hungry or have a religious mission. But if you're a nonprofit, if you're a for-profit corporation, if you're Exxon, if you're a Wall Street corporation, what do you want? You want to make money. And if you're paying off a politician and you're not getting anything back for it, well, you've just wasted the shareholders' money. That CEO, if you buy a politician and you don't get a quid pro quo, if you bribe a politician and you don't get anything back, you should be fired for wasting the money of the corporation. But we all know that corporations don't feel their money buying politicians is wasted. They feel they're getting something back. They feel that if they give millions of dollars to Chris Christie and the Republican Governors Association, they'll get something back. And lo and behold, Exxon did. Exxon had a problem with New Jersey, an environmental problem, which the jury found they owed $9 billion. That's a lot of money. Well, Exxon's got it. Don't worry. They make far more than that in a single year. But they would have to pay that to New Jersey for environmental cleanup and all the other problems there. But Chris Christie said, you know what? $9 billion, that's too much. I'll make you a deal. Half off? No. You gave me money for the Republican Association. How about 75% off? Then you'd only pay $2 billion. No. How about 90% off? 90% off. You'll only give me $900 million instead of $9 billion. 90% of the money you owe to New Jersey, we'll just forgive. No, that's not generous enough. In the end, Chris Christie gave them 97% off. A mere $250 million, or if I've done my math right, about 3% of the money they owed to New Jersey was paid. 3%. Yeah, my math's right. When Exxon gave a few million dollars to the political campaigns Chris Christie was looking to have money to give to, I think they got a whole bunch off for their money. They gave a few million, and they got billions back. That, my friends, is legal bribery. Now, you know, I guess I shouldn't call it bribery since it's legal. But what else do you call it when you pay off a politician to get what you want and you get what you want? Again, if there was no quid pro quo, Exxon wasted its money. But I think it's fair to say there is one. Why isn't this the scandal in the news? I mean, I get that Hillary Clinton shouldn't have kept a private email, should have kept a separate private email from the government email. She didn't want to carry two phones. All right. We require our presidential candidates to be perfect. Go ahead, blame Hillary. But when another presidential candidate is practicing bribery and doing so, and it's not even a story because it's legal and because virtually everybody does it, is that not a greater scandal? Welcome back to the show. This is Mark Levine. Got a few minutes more. There's a shooting in Tunisia. I'm concerned anytime there's a mess in the Middle East. But Tunisia particularly hurts because Tunisia was going to be the great success story of the Arab Spring. I still think it can be. And I also don't think we should, you know, worry that the whole country is going down just because of this shooting. After all, we've had our own terrible mess of shootings throughout the United States. And as much as I complain about those, it doesn't mean that our whole system of government is falling apart. Nevertheless, it is definitely a concern when a bunch of gunmen go into a museum in the largest city, the capital of Tunisia, in Tunis, and kill 19 people, and basically the hundreds of visitors in the museum. The protection of the United States for our president, the Secret Service, just the stories get worse and worse. It's not so much what happened. Apparently they were drunk and they hit a barrier outside the White House. Okay, so nothing really happened. It's more a concern for what may happen. I mean, these are the telltale signs of something that needs to be fixed now before it's too late. Apparently President Obama also got some cyanide in a letter to him. I'm sure it was checked first. But these are real issues. These are things we have to be concerned about. There's also the Israeli elections. You may have heard Prime Minister Netanyahu was reelected after saying some really ugly things, really unfortunate things. He talked about the Arabs in Israel lining up to vote. Well, they should line up to vote. Israel is a democracy. They have every right to vote. They are Israeli citizens. Israel is a country with two official languages, Hebrew and Arabic. There are schools in Arabic. There are entire Arab towns. Israel is a place where Muslims and Christians and Baha'i and atheists have equal rights to Jews. So the fact that the prime minister would complain about them voting, I don't know, it kind of reminds me of the Republicans who claim publicly or more often privately, look at all those blacks voting. Well, in some ways you get it. Right? They know that the vast majority of African Americans in the United States are voting for Democrats, and they don't like that because they want to win elections. But think about what that means. First of all, not all blacks vote for the Democrats, although the vast majority do. Not all Arabs are going to vote against Netanyahu. To write off a whole sector of your country, of your citizens, and to suggest that their voting is somehow invalid is very concerning. That doesn't mean that Israel doesn't face great danger from Arab countries all around it that are trying to destroy it. You know, next door is Syria and Lebanon, countries that are falling apart because of ISIS and Hezbollah and Iran. All of that's true, no question about it. But when it comes to your nation's citizens, I think you hold them to a different standard. You know, in World War II, we took Japanese Americans, loyal Japanese Americans, and because we were fighting a very nasty war against Japan, put them in camps. And the vast majority of them were loyal. Now, this is not putting them in camps, obviously. This is simply complaining about their voting. But this goes back to me in Oregon. You should never complain about someone voting, even if they're not voting for you. Even if they're not voting for you, listen up, Republicans, even if someone's not voting for you, taking away their right to vote, complaining about someone voting is not conducive to a strong democracy. If you don't like that other people are voting for your opponents, you have two choices. One is to bring more of your own people out, and the second and better choice is to try to appeal to a broader swath of the electorate. So Netanyahu was reelected. I understand why he's reelected. I understand Israelis have a right to be nervous given where they live. But the way he was reelected, I left a bad taste in my mouth. This is Mark Levine. You want to find out more about me, go to my website, marklevinetalk.com. Follow me on Twitter at marklevinetalk.